This is the Charlie Polillo Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Tri-Eagle Energy. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Charlie Polillo.
The audio clip as we bridge into some conversation with Jeff Van Gundy 25 years ago tonight. It's not as if it feels like it was yesterday, but 25 years ago tonight, Jim Lampley and Gil Clancy. Clancy was one of the worst short-term predictions ever on HBO as George Foreman at 45 years old knocked out Michael Moore to win the heavyweight boxing championship of the world and then would go on to sell more than 100 million grills and then sold his naming rights to selling those grills for $138 million. But 25 years ago tonight, November 5th, 1994, George Foreman, it happened. It happened. Beautiful, simple call by Jim Lampley. All right, so how do I get from that into Jeff Van Gundy? 1994, prominent year around here. Jeff was a fuzzy-faced assistant coach. I'm not picking at a scab. I promise. It would be rude our first visit in several months. So much of a boxing fan, you happen to remember, did you watch the fight or hear about the fight? Or did you have a reaction to, oh my God, George Foreman at 45 just became the heavyweight champ again. And hello, Jeff.
Hello, how are you? You know, I hadn't really thought of it. I didn't realize he was that old when he won it again. And I didn't know he sold that many grills. I mean, he's one of the great businessmen for an ex-athlete ever.
No wow. question.
That's unbelievable.
Do you own one of those babies at some point? The lean, mean
grilling
machine?
No, I'm not a griller. I should have learned, but no, that's not my game.
All these years living in Houston now, you're still not a griller?
No, I like to go to parties where people are grilling, though.
Good thought. I actually second that wholeheartedly. All right, to some basketball stuff, and maybe you can help me with this or agree or shoot me down. I think part of it is post-Astros, the dramatic run all the way to Game 7 of the World Series, and then probably some citywide letdown of the way it ended. We are in the teeth of football season as well. But the basketball season, NBA version, does it feel as if it's off to a sluggish start? And if so, given all the storylines and legitimate championship contenders in the new-look NBA this season, what might you point to if you're feeling any of the same?
Well, I think it depends on what city you're in.
Yeah.
Or what team you're a fan of. Because in Houston, I think it makes sense that it's off to a sluggish start. Not only have they played, okay, but not great. But you do have the Astros, and obviously they had such a remarkable year. And then Texans in 6-3, you know, the Watt injury, the hype over Deshaun Watson. So it's a lot of different things, but there is certainly, you know, a little bit of a sluggishness to how it started off for Houston. And I think if you're in L.A., though, you're really hyped because you got James and Davis. And you got Kawhi with Paul George coming back.
Fewer preseason games, more international preseason games, and fewer preseason practices, I presume, more important than fewer preseason games. Do you think that can contribute to an overall sloppiness of play? We're seeing a rash of 20-plus turnover games. And again, Rocket-centric, absolutely part of it, but the three-point shooting on balance has just been horrible. And again, there's the whole small sample size thing to consider, too.
Well, I think that the turnover part is due to more teams practicing less exhibition games, and even the ones that they play are more about avoiding injury than getting your game together. So I think the players and the organizations have made a conscious decision to de-emphasize both the exhibition games and training camp. And I think because of that, you get a product that's probably a little less than we would hope for early in the year. I think the early three-point shooting is going to happen in most years. Guys are not yet in total rhythm, nor are they in great game shape. And I think you see that with a lot of teams really struggling from behind the arc.
As the wild offseason evolved, I'm curious what your immediate visceral reactions were and then maybe with a little distance, that as the moves came down, Anthony Davis joining LeBron with the Lakers, the Kawhi and Paul George parlay joining that Clippers nucleus, and then the big Westbrook-Paul exchange and the retooling somewhat of the Rockets, as those hit, how were you evaluating those moves and the power structure, and was there a clear winner in your mind?
Well, I think the Davis one was a no-brainer for both teams. I thought New Orleans did as well as you could when a superstar is forcing his way out and is at the end of the contract. He has to want to go to where you're trading him. So I thought they got good value back, and obviously the Lakers got an absolute star, even though he's had some injury-prone moments in his career. I think the most surprising one to me was Paul George demanding to be traded to the Clippers. I never saw that coming after he re-signed the previous year. I thought they gave up a lot. It was well worth it because they have a championship caliber team with Leonard and George and a good nucleus around them. And then the Westbrook one, to me, caught me off guard, not because I thought Westbrook wanted to be moved. I thought that made a lot of sense after George decided to be traded. But I think I was higher on Chris Paul and his time in Houston maybe than others were. I thought he did an outstanding job for them. I thought they played exceptionally well. I think the only thing that held them back during that period of time was his injuries and his vulnerability to hamstring issues.
So how do you think it nets out? Obviously, Westbrook, well, he can't shoot the three. How does he fit? He does give him a transition game that they've lacked. My biggest question is, you know, there are times you can hide Harden in the post defensively, but a Westbrook-Harden defensive tandem, given what else they have, do you think that can be NBA championship caliber, at least this season NBA championship caliber?
Well, let's start with the positives. I think Westbrook's biggest positive that he brings to the team, besides the transition attack, is it shores up a weak rebounding team. He is a great, great, all-time great guard rebounder. And that then leads to his hard push and transition. So they've got more of a push and transition, and then you have the ultimate half-court pick-and-roll isolation player in Harden. Now, how Westbrook fits into that over the course of the year, we'll see. The defensive issues are real. They're not going away. I'll be interested to see how they can camouflage them or address them throughout the year. But Elston Turner, as the defensive coordinator, and Mike D'Antoni have their hands full, because this is not a gifted defensive team. And they're going to have to try to figure out how to sort of mix and match, camouflage it, scheme out of it, so that they're at least a top half of the team defensively. Because if you're not a top half defensive team, you're really not a championship caliber team.
Our first visit this season with Jeff Van Gundy, ESPN ABC, Rockets Warriors tomorrow night. Obviously grossly watered down. I imagine around the league, Jeff, not a whole lot of sympathy for the Warriors' plight, given the last 5 years they were able to enjoy and revel in and win three championships. But geez, you must be thinking, this is ridiculous. I mean, how many of the guys who started for them last night could you name?
Well, I have to say, I think I keep up with college basketball fairly well. But I didn't know some of the guys, you know, try starting lineup the other night, particularly Kai Bowman. I didn't know him. The guy from Villanova, Pascal, I thought was a good college player, but he's performed exceedingly well. And I think the last two games, when they've been young without their veterans, they've played exceptionally hard and acquitted themselves well. But it's going to be a long, long year for the Golden State fan. And I think the one thing that they can hope for is that they get a high lottery pick and able to refurbish their team with better health and a young player.
So with the Warriors almost at the flip of a switch off the table, right, the dynasty of a half decade, it's more opened up than it's been in years. Where do you draw the line for you, the first-tier contenders, that if I say Team X wins the West, you're not saying don't get carried away?
I still see it being really difficult for both Utah and Denver to win the West. I know Utah in Vegas, I think, had the best record prediction for the West. And I could see that in the regular season. I think they just still have such limits offensively. I would see it would be hard for them to, you know, win it all. So that's the one I would say. I love how they play. I love how they guard. Donovan Mitchell is a really, really good player and an exceptional human being. So I root for them. I just don't know if they have enough offense.
So you think if given health, it's Lakers and Clippers versus the field in the West?
You know, I thought I would put Houston in there, too, at the start of the year, but I'm going to hold off on that because of their defensive issues. And so I think it is right now the L.A. teams in the Western Conference. I think both, particularly when George gets back, have great talent, great balance. And the Lakers, to me, so far this year, are a huge surprise defensively. Frank Vogel has them playing exceptionally hard defensively, and LeBron James looks like he's trying at that end of the floor with a much different intensity than we've seen in regular seasons past at that end of the floor, setting a great tone.
Thought on the East, you think it's Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and then everyone else? Or, hey, you know, give this team or those couple teams a chance to build and grow. Speaking of teams easy to root for, when your team plays harder than the opponent, the percentage of the time that Spoelstra has the Heat play, I don't know if they ultimately have enough top-end talent, but, man, that's an impressive squad. Year in, year out.
It is. I think the one thing about Miami is they have rejected much of what's accepted today in the modern NBA. And all those old-fashioned values centered around hard work and team play. So I admire them every year to me, regardless of how much talent Eric has in Miami. He maxes out what he has. I think they play hard. I think they play well together. And they have one of the great stories in the NBA so far, from an individual standpoint, in this rookie Kendrick Nunn, who on the team the last couple of years didn't even start, and now he's starting for the Miami Heat and playing exceptionally well. I think he and keep Phoenix playing exceptionally well. They have a tough team to surround the really unique offensive talents of Devin Booker.
5-2 start. Monty Williams, the first Fortnite coach of the year. No doubt about that. A couple quick things before I let you go, Jeff. Load management, right? A phrase of the modern NBA. A load of something else, smart, or both? And I think of guys like Karl Malone, John Stockton, Gary Payton, Michael Jordan, just who never missed games year in, year out, maximum workload, maximum night in, night out effort. A simpler time, I guess.
Well, my thing is, if you're going to say it's scientifically based, I'll reject that, because there's no science to prove that how we're going about this is preventing injuries. As you see early in the season, we're being hit with more and more injuries. And so I reject the notion that how they're going about it is actually preventing injuries. That would be number one. Number two, I think it becomes difficult if you're a fan to know exactly who's going to play in a game. And I know maybe right now it hasn't hit us, but to me, when you bait and switch your consumer with advertising, come to see this guy play, and then that guy, even when healthy, does not play, I think you leave yourself vulnerable to fans being turned off. I know myself as a fan, when I turn on a team looking forward to seeing player X play, and he's healthy and he chooses not to play, or the organization chooses not to play him, I don't stay on that game.
I think it's the only reasonable reaction. And lastly, a quickie one I don't think I've ever asked you over the years. Who's your favorite baseball player of all time? You're a little young for Willie Mays, or was that still the first impression?
No, I was too young for him. I would say, for me, Mike Piazza was up there. I loved him when I was in New York. I thought he was the best hitting catcher I'd seen. Roger Clemens, when I came to Houston and watched him pitch, in the independent league here, I was like, with the Skeeters, I was like, are you kidding me? This guy's a machine. So that would be it. And I got one for you, Charlie. So this has been bothering me. Why are we all assuming Gerrit Cole, that we're not going to sign Gerrit Cole? Like, my thing is, in basketball, if you had the best player like Michael Jordan, you wouldn't say we couldn't afford him. So why has it just become this notion that we're not going to sign him and we can't afford him? I don't get it.
Yeah, I think the air of inevitability as part of it. It's not a salary cap league, so someone can come in just way over the top in one of these super rich markets. So the Astros are more a have market than have not, but not New York or Los Angeles. And I just think there's probably enough smoke to the backstory of California guy, grew up 5 miles from Angel Stadium. All right, they can't promise year in, year out winning. Well, the Dodgers can, 15 miles. A two-hour commute, Garrett. He can helicopter to home games if he wants. So it sounds like the die is cast. Jim Crane's just saying yesterday that, hey, we'll make a run at it. But any negotiation, I think you have to have a point where you're saying it's just fiscally irresponsible for the long term. But I think the foremost fear, Jeff, is that Garrett wants to go home to California. We'll find out.
Listen, you can't do anything about it if he wants to go home. But I've just never heard of a great player. You're just like that era of inevitability. Like, no, we're not going to be able to afford him. Other than, like, back in the day with the Oakland A's when they had Giambi and all those guys that you knew they couldn't afford.
Right. Baseball fan Jeff Van Gundy, and on the call season long again, ESPN, ABC, Rockets, Warriors, and ESPN game tomorrow night. Jeff, good catching up. As always, I very much appreciate the time and insight, and on we go in the new season. Thanks again.
You got it.